of visually impaired pupils and will usually have a trained teacher to support them. Additional support may come from the itinerant teacher service for the visually impaired, although such teachers are likely to work with the mainstream teachers as well. And the third model, individual pupils will be integrated into their neighborhood school. How these pupils are supported will depend upon the severity of the impairment and upon their personal abilities. Some pupils will have no permanent help, but instead their progress will be monitored by the itinerant teachers. And these itinerant teachers will spend their time working with the non-specialist teachers, helping them to develop skills to enable them to cope successfully with having a pupil with a visual impairment as part of their class or as part of their subject. Although actual numbers of pupils with a visual impairment have decreased as a result of increasing medical knowledge and good practice, a larger proportion have additional or multiple disabilities. Although it is difficult to determine the exact number, it has been estimated, for example, in Sweden and in the UK, that up to 60% may come within this category. Such pupils present their own set of problems and will be referred to again briefly in this paper. A fourth change can be seen in the decreasing numbers of Braille users. Greater emphasis is placed upon developing and using residual vision, embracing the work pioneered by Natalie Barriger in the 1960s and the early 1970s. Far more is now understood about the visual system and how we can measure the different aspects that make up the process of vision, thanks to such work as People by Hilaire Hyvarinen. Print is now accepted as the learning medium of these pupils, although in some cases, of course, they may use both print and Braille. My fifth point refers to the way in which the use of computer-based assistive and adaptive technology has enabled many pupils with quite severe vision impairments to have access to the same curriculum as their fully sighted peers. But my final point examines the changes in the role of teachers working with visually impaired pupils. No longer can teachers assume in my country that they will always have a position in a special school, although I do feel that there is a role for such schools in the future as valuable resource centers. Instead, there are now opportunities for working in mainstream schools, supporting pupils. But the biggest growth has been in the itinerant services. Each local education district in my country has a team of such teachers. If we can accept that for the majority of pupils with a visual impairment, that their education will take place in mainstream schools, then what are the implications for the pupils themselves, and what are the training needs of their teachers? If we examine the special educational needs of the pupils first, they will guide us to look at the special skills needed by the teachers. It is interesting to note that in three different parts of the world, the United Kingdom, Australia, and the United States of America, there have been declarations from either non-governmental organizations, such as the Royal National Institution for the Blind, or professional organizations, for example, the Australian New Zealand Association for the Education of the Visually Handicapped, about the curricular needs of pupils with a visual impairment. These statements clearly indicate the entitlement of such pupils when they are receiving their education in mainstream schools. All these three countries clearly state that the educational goals for pupils with a visual impairment are the same as for all pupils, but recognize that in addition to the mainstream curriculum, these pupils will require an additional special curriculum. For example, in Australia, they describe this special curriculum as the expanded curriculum, and this may include such areas as communication modes. And here we would have Braille reading, writing, including the codes for science, foreign languages, Braille mathematics, and Braille music. Tactile skills, concept development, handwriting, keyboard typing skills, and listening skills. And the area of visual skills training. Pupils are entitled to use their residual vision, develop their visual perceptual skills, have training in the use of low vision aids or optical aids and non-optical aids, and the development of compensatory skills. We need to look at their physical abilities, their postural control and balance, fine and gross motor control, locomotor abilities, and their physical strength and endurance. And in the area of orientation and mobility, there is body awareness and environmental awareness, spatial understanding, safe, independent, confident, socially acceptable movement, and independent travel. And for their social skills, reasons for interacting, the desire to interact, socially acceptable behavior, and development of their self-esteem, self-confidence, and self-advocacy. And in daily living skills, self-care, organizational skills, time management, decision-making, pre-vocational and career skills, and advocacy. And in the growing area of resources and technology, the use of appropriate low technology, high technology, assistive and adaptive technologies. It is possible that each one of you will be saying to yourself, but what about? Of course, this list is certainly not complete. But if we accept that this list is a minimum requirement for pupils in mainstream, what are the implications for the teachers working with these pupils? Do all teachers need the same level of knowledge, skills, and understanding? In the three countries I have mentioned, all of them are of the opinion that these pupils should have access to teachers who are specially trained to work with the visually impaired. In these countries, most of the teachers will have had previous experience of teaching fully sighted children and will have chosen to work with the visually impaired at a later stage of their professional life. Once they are employed in this area, training, usually equivalent to a minimum of a one-year full-time study, is provided by an institute of higher education, for example, a university. This may be in the form of part-time study where teachers attend the university for several weeks at a time, or perhaps one day, evening, a week during the year. Another method of training that is popular both in the USA and my university is that of distance education. The teacher is fully employed in the school and then studies course materials and learns Braille in their own time. Attendance is required at the university for a minimum of 4 long weekends during the 2 years. And the teachers are required to pass a practicum during the final year of the course. Further details of this type of training can be obtained in the paper presented to the Budapest workshop on the teacher training convened by the ICEVI. This pattern of prior experience and postgraduate professional training is perhaps in direct contrast to many Eastern European countries, where students enter specialist training courses at the age of 18. Both systems have their advantages and disadvantages. Certainly, in my country, there is a strong body of opinion that believes we have lost many excellent young teachers in certain areas of special education. For example, severe multiple handicaps and also hearing impairment. Since the training regulations in the mid-1980s prevented them from choosing a special education course at the age of 18. The demise of the special school in our countries has meant that the opportunity for new teachers to work alongside experienced teachers and benefit from their skills and experience is decreasing. Many of the special schools in the United Kingdom have developed expertise in very many important areas. For example, information and communication technology for both blind and low vision pupils, or teaching specific subjects to university entrants, such as physics and chemistry, again to totally blind and low vision pupils. Other schools have developed particular expertise in working with pupils with a range of additional disabilities. Having described the specific needs of pupils in mainstream schools and patterns of inclusive education, what then are the skills, knowledge, and understanding required by the teachers? It is again the opinion of teacher trainers in the United Kingdom, USA, also Sweden and Finland, that there is a set of core competencies required by all teachers of the visually impaired. And the next section is taken directly from the paper agreed by these countries. So this part of the presentation examines the competencies required by teachers of children with a visual impairment. In carrying out their roles, these teachers will be called upon to meet the needs of those for whom the effect on their visual impairment ranges from total blindness to limited but useful vision. These teachers we are describing may be working with directly with individuals or groups of blind and low vision pupils. They may be working as supporting teachers in institutions in assessment, curriculum planning, preparation of materials, and planning of a learning environment. They will be working alongside parents and professionals from other disciplines, such as doctors, ophthalmologists, social workers, low vision therapists, rehabilitation workers, and policy makers. And they will provide professional support and advice to learners, parents, teachers, and again, other professionals. These countries agree that the teacher should be able to demonstrate a knowledge and understanding of 12 different areas. Time, I think, prevents me from reading them all out, so I will just select two or three to give you an idea. And I do have several copies of my paper, which I'm sure can be photocopied for those who are interested. But firstly, one of the areas we think is important is the anatomy and physiology of visual functions in normal development and the implications of visual impairment on physical, cognitive, emotional, social and language development and then effects upon the individual's independence. We would expect them to understand the principles of assessment of functional vision. To have an awareness of mobility training, and to understand the significance of visual impairment for those with mental retardation, or as we call them, learning difficulties, and multiple impairments. That is some of the areas. We should also expect the teachers to demonstrate an ability to, and again I will select some areas, carry out and organize an appropriate assessment of the needs of pupils with a visual impairment, and to present a report of that assessment, taking note of any potential audience, and perhaps use developmental scales, for example, orientation and mobility checklists. We would expect them to be able to evaluate competing demands in planning of the curriculum for the visually impaired student, looking at and designing the IEP, taking account the individual's learning needs, age, culture. Use materials designed to evaluate and train residual vision. Design, produce, evaluate material in the appropriate medium, for example, tactile materials, braille, print size, environmental conditions for students, using both traditional low-tech methods and the new technology. And we have 20 such areas where we would expect the student to demonstrate an ability. And one very important one is to use techniques for teaching Braille to all students who need it, and to read and write Braille to an acceptable standard in each country. So let me assure all of you who have anxieties about this area, we are highly committed to the use of Braille for those pupils who need it. Okay? So again, if we can accept that this list, which I have just given you as some examples, presents, again, a minimum requirement for all teachers, we can then look at some of the areas that may be specific to those teachers working in some type of support or advisory work, what we call itinerant or peripatetic teachers. First of all, there will be the personal qualities that you would look for in such a person. They will need a sense of humor. They will need diplomacy and tact. They will have to show assertiveness. They'll need enthusiasm and the ability to motivate others. And they will have to have the ability to cope well with stress and working in isolation. They will need the skills to manage their time effectively, negotiate with a range of individuals, of professionals, communicate effectively with both parents, pupils, teachers, and other professionals, empathize without being condescending, advise without being abrasive or dogmatic, and they will need to be able to write reports concisely and effectively in appropriate language for the target audience, for example, parents. And as part of their professional expertise, such teachers will need to have the competence in to assess and advise on pupils' needs, assess and make recommendations about appropriate learning environments, assess different aspects of functional vision, provide in-service training to staff and awareness training to other pupils. They will need to work with and advise both staff and parents, advise on how to adapt materials and how to use adaptive and assistive communication technology, train pupils in the use of functional vision, low vision aids, perhaps mobility and orientation skills, and of course work with a wide age range and intellectual and visual spectrum. They'll need to have a knowledge of mainstream school systems and legislation, and a knowledge of how to coordinate access to a range of specialist services and professionals. As it can be seen from this summary, such a role, the role of the itinerant teacher in mainstream school, is a demanding one. And above all, such teachers will need the professional credibility which is the natural result of a thorough training course backed up by appropriate experience. The success of pupils in mainstream and national programs for inclusion in any country is heavily dependent upon the quality of such teachers. Therefore, it is my opinion, it is in the best interest of any country to invest in the training of such teachers. Not to recognize the importance of quality training is to deny the child and the young person with a visual impairment equality of opportunity. Thank you.
Sayın konuşmacı, Mrs. Heather Mason'a çok teşekkür ediyoruz.